Christian Horner, it comes as no shock to hear that you've been sacked as team principal of Red Bull. Did you know that this was a possibility?
Yeah, no.
Did Red Bull's upper management give you any warning?
Yeah, no.
And is Max happy with this decision?
Yeah, no.
And do you think the team will be able to cope with this sudden change going forward?
Yeah, no.
Christian Horner there, as clear and as decisive as ever. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, and he's Zog.
Hello.
How you doing, big fella? I haven't seen you since we were at Le Mans together.
Yeah, since our little trip to France. Well, I'm enjoying the sun. It's not quite as... it is just about as lovely as it was in France. It's a lovely day here.
The weather was fantastic at Le Mans this year, and something that you missed, unfortunately, because you went a different route back to us North Walians. On the Monday, we went to Le Musée Le 24 Heures du Mans, the museum there, and it was empty.
Oh, really?
We were the only people there, apart from, I don't know, less than a dozen other people. Me, Phil, and Chris. And I knew I'd come to the right place when we arrived. I don't know if you remember, when you get to the musée, the introduction is a series of full-length pictures of important people who played a significant part in the history of the 24 hours of Le Mans. With a little case next to it, the little artifact, like a pair of goggles or a hat or a glass and stuff. And I knew I'd gone there with the right people when we arrived, and both Phil and Chris spent more than 8 minutes reading and digesting every single little box there and getting the story. They were in no hurry. You know, it's like when you go to museums with kids. They say, right, I've seen that, next thing.
Yeah.
Not these guys. They were immersed in it. The joy, Zog, you remember that feeling?
Drinking in the information. Oh, no, good for them. Well, no, I'm sorry I missed the museum trip. We did try to go during the weekend, but it wasn't open to the... Yeah, I think it was only open to some select groups, I think, when we were passing, and so we couldn't get in. But we went a few years ago. It's a fantastic museum. Although I didn't get to hit the museum in its expanded form this year, it's got bigger and better, I believe. There was kind of a special exhibit at the race that I really enjoyed seeing. Did you catch this back in the Porsche Hospitality? The road going 963, the 963 RSP, which, for anyone who's not familiar, is the car that Roger Penske, race team owner and reasonably wealthy man, asked Porsche to make him because he'd been running 963s in race teams and thought, I'd like one of those for the road. And if you're Roger Penske, that's the kind of thing that Porsche will do for you. And so they've built this one-off road-going 963 RSP that was sitting there very beautiful in the corner of the Porsche Hospitality at Le Mans. Did you?
I'm aware of it. I don't know. I don't think I saw it in the flesh this year, but I'm aware of it for some reason. It's a blur. But, Zog, you know, you have a deep passion for many individual Porsche cars, as well as the entire Porsche story and brand, right? You are... an evangelist, I think, where no evangelism is necessary. We're on the same page with you.
Yeah. A fanboy, if one's being less kind. But yeah, evangelist, enthusiast, I'll take those as well.
The idea of you, that would be the number one Porsche that you would park outside your house there in West London.
I did ask how much it would cost. Quite a big but not very precise number was the suggestion. I'm not sure they're building any more of those. I don't know, maybe if you're Roger Penske and you've asked them to build you this one-off beautiful road car, they'll say, yep, we won't do any more of those. Or maybe you're not that precious. Maybe you'd be happy for anyone else to have the same experience. But it really is remarkably little changed from the race car. Some, you know, bits and vents are covered up over the wheels for legality, and there's some electronic changes to the turn indicators and headlights. It's jacked up to the maximum possible ride height, but it's on the same race dampers that the race car has, and it's very nicely trimmed. The interior trim is rather rather nicer than the race car.
Nice.
But apparently one of the trickiest things was getting the paint right on it. You know, you'd think there might be some very difficult technical issue maybe in making this, you know, a race car work for the road, but if you do very little modification to it, no real issues there.
So when you say getting...
Making the paint look right.
Making the paint look right. So you've got a body shell, but the race car, they would never put on the multitude of layers that you would for a road car. So this has never been fully painted in that way before for road use. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. You don't paint your carbon fibre race bodies, don't usually get... Well, no, they're just never painted as you would paint a road car, with all of those layers and with the objective of having something that's, you know, very hard wearing, that will last years in the sun and is going to look beautiful. You wrap your race cars generally.
Yeah, these days.
Much
yeah.
better way of doing it.
They all stick it up for Le Mans.
Stick it up for Le Mans, but
when I said I was aware of this car, I'd seen it online, but what I did see, which is slightly blurring things for me, was a road-going version of a McLaren Can-Am car that was on display, if memory serves, at the museum.
Ooh.
So similar kind of thing, take the most ultimate performance car you can. Sorry, that's bad English. The most ultimate performance. Is that acceptable English?
The most... That's not quite right.
Yeah, yeah. Take a car of ultimate performance, designed for the track, and make it a road legal car. It has happened many times over the years. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course the 963 RSP, it does rather recall both the Count Rossi 917. Let's get rich guy Count Rossi back in the 70s went to Porsche and said, "Hey, make me a road going 917." So they did very little to an X race 917. Hermes trimmed interior, I believe. This recalls that, and also the dour Porsche 962s of the 1990s. So after the 962 had been racing and was no longer a young car, Dower Racing made some road-going versions of the 962, and having made road-going versions, they could then race them back at Le Mans. So the 962 made a return to racing as these Dower Porsche 962s, which were a very limited series of street legal 962 derivatives. So yeah, so this is recalled that bonkersness.
One of my favourites of that conversion of a race car, a Le Mans car, to road car was the Mercedes, was it called the CLK LMGT? Was that what it was called? It was, you know, that silver floor-hugging ultra.
The one that Mark Webber flipped.
That was actually the CLR. That was the follow-up to the CLK. That was the one that Mark Webber and, what's his name, Peter Dumbreck did somersaults in.
I think it was.
So not that one, but there was a road-going version of the CLK with indicators and everything.
How many of those did they make?
That's a good question. I'll look into that. Hey!
But before we leave Le Mans, which we must move on from,
it's hard, isn't it?
It is hard. But the big win for me this year was finding somewhere to take the place in my heart that has been left empty by the disappearance of the Grand Marnier Crepe.
And that was
stand at Le Mans, which hasn't been there for a few years, which was Bruno's ice cream stall.
Yes.
Local farmer Bruno with his fantastic ice cream. So good. I had ice cream there every day I was there, and I'm going to be going back there every day when I'm at Le Mans again. It's there. Bruno does fantastic ice cream, there are some yogurt drinks as well, I gather, pretty good. But the ice cream is the standout.
Oh, all our gang had to stop there every time we passed. For me, there was a place selling, what are they called, Pocky Bowl, which is kind of a cold pasta salad that was the freshest, healthiest thing I've ever eaten at Le Mans. Honestly, that was tremendous. Great experience, Le Mans. Hey, come on. Big experiences, big, you know, motorsport weekends. We've got to talk about the motorsport weekend that just happened, the British Grand Prix.
And how much did you like seeing that podium, the third place podium? Yes.
Just tell me who came third, Zod.
Nico Hülkenberg. I just knew you were going to be made up at that result. Doesn't matter what happens in the rest of the season now. You're made up now that Hulk has finally got his podium.
Vindicated.
And come on, I mean, you know, he certainly earned it. You know, whether you say he earned it through, you know, being in the sport and starting over 240 Grand Prix.
Yeah.
You know, whether he's earned it by, his staying power of sticking around the sport and seniority, I guess, or whether through in really very tricky conditions this weekend, just not putting a foot wrong, getting everything right, no mistakes.
He does excel in tricky conditions. He got a pole in Brazil many years ago, I think in a Williams when it was torrential. You know, you can count on him to be there and not throw it off the black stuff, which so many drivers managed to do. It was a lottery, the early laps of the British Grand Prix this year. Verstappen, I'm not laughing, Verstappen didn't win because, you know, in the build-up to the Grand Prix, Verstappen was constantly complaining about his car. It was undrivable. It was all over the place. He had oversteer, he had understeer, he had everything in all combinations except the one that he wanted. And then it comes to qualifying and he's the quickest. I don't know how they do it, how he does it. I'm a great admirer of his ability to wrestle or sort out a car, or is this just generally how the weekend goes for Red Bull? Even every team, you get out there, you run your program, you know, your initial bedding in, your settings more or less, and you start tweaking and start tweaking, and some teams lose their way, but some teams get it right. It's very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, and Red Bull and Verstappen have a real knack for getting it right.
Yeah.
Quite apart from whatever Max is dragging up in terms of, you know, that last little bit of performance that you can bring in a moment when you really want to nail this lap, you don't want to leave anything on the table. You know, and he does have an ability to, you know, I think to, you know, to reach deep and just perform that little bit better in those critical qualifying laps.
Yeah,
he did an extraordinary job. I mean, as soon as I saw the weather for Sunday, though, I was sure he was going to struggle during the race because with the skinnier, slipperier setup that they had on the car and with the car being a bit of a handful in any case, you know, I really thought he was going to have a hard time in the race. And sure enough, he really, really had a tough time. McLarens were just on it. And, completely dominated. It was a little surprising to me how hard Lewis found it towards the end of the race. There was that sort of moment when maybe 15 or so laps before the end of the race when it was still slippery and they were still on the intermediate tyres. And I was kind of expecting Hamilton to make a bit more forward progress and to basically grab the podium place, and he wasn't able to, you know, either when they were still on inters or then when they switched to slicks, he wasn't able to make the progress that honestly I was expecting and was actually struggling a little bit more at that point.
It was bittersweet for me that Hulk effectively deposed Lewis from a podium. It would have been wonderful for Lewis to be on the podium in red at the British Grand Prix. I'm going to take Hulk, but I was kind of hoping that Lewis would finally deliver something this weekend. And again, the car just couldn't. He had an off towards the end, didn't he? He had a bit of a departure, as everybody did. We're getting there, though. I'm patient. We're getting there, but it seems like a long journey.
Yeah, to be fair to Ferrari, that, you know, they do seem to be making progress, and you know the Ferrari was pretty quick this weekend. You know, in the end, the McLarens were dominant as so often, but Ferrari they were kind of best of the rest, if you ignore the fact that Hulk actually beat them to the podium. They're coming on. Good progress.
Hey, very briefly, because we're going to stop this now because we want to talk to Alex, but very briefly, let me just point something out. 20 years ago, plus or minus 3 days, you and I were at Silverstone to record the very first episode of Gareth Jones on Speed.
And I think one of those drivers we've been talking about was right there with us. I think, didn't you nearly bump into him, or one of us nearly bumped into him, I think, if I
Lewis.
Wasn't, no, Hülkenberg.
Hulk! Wasn't, at the British Grand Prix 20 years ago.
I'm thinking about A1GP recently.
We bumped into him at Brands Hatch at the A1GP season that he, 2006 maybe it was, he won, I forget now, but at his first attempt, and I've been a fan ever since. But 20 years ago we recorded the first episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, and that Grand Prix, who won that Grand Prix, do you remember? I know.
You know, I don't. To my shame, I don't.
It was Juan Pablo Montoya in a McLaren. A Mercedes, a McLaren Mercedes, you know. So that was kind of bookending. Very nice, very nice. And the British Grand Prix made me think of one of the songs that I've written for the show over the years, Silverstone Summer, a song written in the style of the Sundays about the terrible, terrible weather that you get at Silverstone, even in the summer on the hottest day of the year. I mean, my birthday, it fell on my birthday, you know, or the day before my birthday. And it's always nice on my birthday, except if you're at Silverstone, where it'll be like a raging gale, you get trench foot and all that. Hey.
There you go. Okay.
A fan of Blur, or perhaps you like The Cure.
Oh, you usually see us at bus stops in groups of 3, 4, or 5. Our expressions are glum, we miss out on the fun because goths don't drive.
Maybe you love the gothic rock of the Damned. Could Kanye West be more your sort of thing?
Whoa, Lewis, don't want to say this, but slow down, brother, you're staring at an abyss. Whoa, Lewis, we love it when you're racing, but this God thing's just embarrassing.
Or do you really want to hear Jackie Stewart singing rock and roll?
Back in the 1970s, we drove cars with a large metal spike sticking out of the steering wheel. If you made the slightest mistake, you were dead.
You tell me how to stand.
Don't miss 20 Years on Speed, a live recording of this podcast involving you. Yes, if you're at the Motorsport Lounge on Saturday, the 19th of July, 2025, then you can take part in this exclusive event. You can see Richard Porter, Zog, and me live on stage as we record an edition of the podcast and watch us play a full set of bespoke Gareth Jones on Speed and Pit Stop Boys comedy tunes. And then we'll meet you at the bar for a drink and a chat. Get your tickets now. Search 20 Years on Speed at Eventbrite.
She don't care that he's dyslexic.
Or click on the link at GarethJones.tv. See you there. It's going to be great. It really is.
Listen, Jackie, I respect what you say. As the architect of F1 today, you made it better, you made it safer. Removed your helmet, created a monster. Jackie Stewart's a hell of a guy. Jackie Stewart's got one good eye.
20 years of Gareth Jones on Speed? Are you kidding?
and the three current members of the On Speed team are quorate. Joining me via the gift of Riverside is Alex Goy. Hey, Alex.
Hi.
How you doing, Dougal? You all right?
I'm currently trying to get a cat to not try and rip a plant off a shelf.
Right.
Down, yeah. Otherwise, good.
I'm expecting interruptions from Seamus at some point. Excellent. He is around.
Yes, can, no, otherwise, very good. Life Universe and everything is keeping me neatly busy. I mean, I've seen you twice in the last month, which is quite incredible, frankly, considering how absent I've been. But, yeah, post Le Mans, I went to Brands Hatch. I went to film some people racing Ferraris, which was good fun. That film coming soon to Driven on YouTube, if you want to follow a rookie's adventures in the Ferrari Challenge, being a very... Our driver is a guy called John Markar. He's a very lovely boy, and he's very hard on himself. He has very high expectations of going out and getting a trophy, despite the fact he's never raced a 700-horsepower Ferrari race car before, and he's going up against lots of people who have. So he's doing incredibly well, but he doesn't seem to think he's doing incredibly well. And Brands was his home circuit. And he did all right. Day one, the racing... practice day... tyre delaminated, and he got very, very lucky. We don't quite know which god he said something nice to, but whatever it was, he owes them a lot of money.
He's probably talking to the old gods and the new.
Yeah, it was quite
hedgy bet, very wise.
Day one, he got sort of trapped behind some people in the class below him, which meant he was kind of stuck there, which is a bit annoying. And day two, yeah, he did all right. I think fifth, maybe fourth. Can't remember. Not quite a podium, but he's getting there. Next race is Donington in like 2 weeks.
You've been to Brands many times, haven't you, Alex?
I did my race licence there. And I think that's about it. I've driven it a million times on Gran Turismo, so I know the
limit. Yeah.
But that's about it. I think the track I've been to most is Goodwood.
Yeah. Maybe the same for you. Yeah.
I've driven around Goodwood more than anywhere else.
Me too, yeah, I'd say
I love Goodwood. It's quick and it's lovely, and it's, you go there and you think, the war.
Yes, I remember the war. Wasn't it marvellous? All those unnecessary deaths. Wonderful.
The British spirit.
We invented beef or something.
We need to have more blitz spirit in this, the year of our Lord 2025. We need to be miserable and suffer more. Let's pay for our doctors and let's be sad and have diphtheria. Remember that? The good old days.
Oh, good old diphtheria. Who remembers polio? That was marvellous. Marvellous when we had polio. Marvellous.
Love polio.
My mother had polio. Didn't kill her. Nearly did, though. Yeah, I mean, come on. Right, listen.
Terribly good at limbo afterwards.
My mother would never stop a pig in a gate. She had a bowed leg as a result of polio as a child. So, hey.
And your mother did actually have polio.
Yeah. Like I say, brilliant. It's all truth. Everything you get is the truth. But yeah, you sent me a message, Alex, about you having driven a car in the last couple of weeks that I didn't know anything about. I had to look up the name, and I'm going to make a guess at what I think it is based on just seeing the name and the picture. And you tell me if I'm right? This is the Tolman RS205, what's it called?
Sort of. So it's the Peugeot 205 GTI Tolman edition. The whole story behind this is brilliant. So a guy called Chris Tolman, he fell in love with Peugeots and rallying in the 80s. So
we all did.
216 was his jam, right? His dad took him to see a rally and he basically went, I want to do that for a job. That's what I want to do. I love it. And found his way into working in motorsport. So he worked for Prodrive, and he built rally cars, and that was one of his favourite things to do. And then he set up his own business, Tolman Motorsport, and they've run rally cars for people. They run a sort of historic Lola. They've run McLaren race teams. They've run XYZ. And while all this is going on, his facility up in the Midlands is brilliant because they can do pretty much everything on site. I think there's one bit they contract out to someone, but he's also next door, so it doesn't matter. But pre-pandemic or mid-pandemic or something like that, obviously motorsport sort of stopped a bit. His company sort of made idealised, almost resto-modded, but just sort of, because of what it is, it's not a resto-mod, but they just sort of fixed up, I think, a sunbeam of some description. And they'd stuck that round a track and everyone went, oh, that's quite good. And then he realised over lockdown he had this 205 GTI that he'd bought because he loved them, but he hadn't done anything with it. So he and team got together and went, well, all right, how do we make this good? Because at that point, you know, it's a 30-year-old odd French car. It's going to be a sack of shit. No matter how much you adore these things, if it's not been looked after, which I don't think Chris's had been, it would just be a rotten French car. So what they did was they stripped it back. They used motorsport-grade parts on it. They sorted the brakes. They rebuilt the engine, so it's got 134 horsepower in nice. Its base form. They just made it good. They sorted the springs. They sorted the brakes, the motor, and everything inside it is as new, so it's all restored properly. But there's no. It's in a traditional resto mod.
It's a one-off, this, or are they proposing producing these?
The story goes on. They built this sort of one-of-one car, and they loaned it out to a few people and said, what do you think? And they gave it to Ollie Marriage of House Top Gear. It was in their handling day or their car of the year thing or something like that, and it came second because it was so much fun. It's only 134 horsepower, but it's like barely 800 kilos, so you can stamp your foot down and you won't tickle the speed limit, but you feel like you're doing a million miles an hour because it's a tiny French hatchback. There's loads of light going in around you. And then it ended up on Top Gear telly, sort of as a result of that. And it ended up doing rather well there. And now they're building them for people. They make two. They make the Tolman Edition. They make the Tolman Evo. And the Evo is 200 horsepower rocket ship thing, which Chris, by his own admission, goes, nah, it's probably a bit too powerful, a bit too much. That's £145,000.
Okay. Wow.
And can you just clarify one thing here? Because as soon as I heard Tolman in there, I thought of the
Formula One team.
Long defunct. Is there any link
between Tolman.
This is, Tolman and that Tolman?
Well, the Formula One team was Tolman. This is Tolman, T-O-L-M-A-N. I think it was spelled differently.
Right, okay. There you go, different spelling.
So T-O-L-M-A-N for Tom Motorsport and Tolman for Formula One.
Yeah.
There we go.
There's a way to put me on the spot. Alex, who knows so much about F1. There's this defunct Formula One team.
We cleared it up in a moment. Correct information.
I remember being loaned a 205 1.9 GTI by Harry King, a television director in Carlisle, who I was working with. And I have my car enough. I went and drove around Carlisle in it. And I remember realising the ultimate joy of a well-sorted, energetic, but not undrivable front-engined hot hatch, and the sheer joy that car brought me. It was an amazing car. But how many people are willing to spend 140 grand on getting one of those?
The very fast one, the 200 horsepower one, is 140 grand. Right. The not Evo one is 85. Which is still an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
The way it's justified is that you're using motorsport engineers, you're using a lot of R&D, and the bits that go in it are bang on. It is the idealised 205 GTI. But the interesting thing about it is that they're not putting extra wings on it. They're not giving it a million horsepower. They've not turned it into this sort of space shuttle. They've figured out that the people that want these things are the guys that either they wanted one in the 80s and 90s, or they knew someone who had one, but they couldn't quite afford one. And then by the time they could, the insurance was so astronomical that they just couldn't get a hold of one. So they've sort of made the perfect one for the boy what done good.
Would they, do you think, if I asked them, build a Yugo 45 GTI for me? Because there was 1 week where I remember Yugo actually made something. I thought for a moment, I wouldn't mind driving one of those. It looks great. Do you think they would perfect a Yugo for me?
I mean, I'm sure if you gave them enough money, they'd be very keen to. I mean, I asked if they could do other things, and he said, well, talk to me about it. He didn't say what they would build, but
what would you request? What was your kind of childhood, what do they call it? Guilty pleasure's the wrong word, right? But, you know.
Holy Grail.
That'll do.
Well, it's that sort of, not bucket list, but on the list car. You know what? I don't know. That's a really, really good
Something
question.
Relatively mundane, right? Not something supercar platformy. Something that as a child you thought, I like that for whatever reason.
I'd like it to fix up an old Rover Metro Quest Edition 1.1 Quest thing, my first car. The Quest Edition Plus.
That's a very, very specific requirement there.
It was a run out of some description, but that was my first car. It was a sack of shit. I hated it.
Imagine, though, if it wasn't a sack of shit, if Tolman...
All I needed to do was throw £80,000 at it.
Boom. You spend more on that in a week on your Aston petrol, don't you?
Not for long.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Come on, you can't say that.
I have things I need to spend money on, like houses. So it's being fixed up and is going on the market. I need to sort out the number plate on retention. Mm.
So what would you have, a dish of O? Would you have a dish of O built by Tolman?
Yeah, I'd be tempted to give them a Citroën dish of O and see what they could do with that. It's a nice, simple, pure, honest engineering platform to develop, and almost any development you could do on it would probably make it insanely even more of a death trap, I guess.
Yes, probably. But it would be great fun.
Respect to the Peugeot 209 GTI from Tolman.
205.
Sorry, 205. What did I say? 209. You've driven something a bit more mass market appeal, but equally stunning as well, Alex, recently, haven't you?
The Tolman thing, I will say before we move on, the Tolman is probably one of the best cars I've driven this year. And I've driven a lot of silly cars this year, but only because it's small, it's light, it's not very powerful, but it was just so much fun. Because it was so analogue, there was no like, oh, I'm over here in a field and oh, the world's gone backwards. You could hammer around in this thing and it just ate it all up. It was absolutely brilliant. If I had the money, I'd have one like a shop. But sadly, I don't. The other big thing I've been driving is a bit of a run-out special from a very confusing time in Audi's history. So I've driven Audi's RS6 GT, which was supposed to be a last-of-the-line RS6 because the A6 was going to go all electric. So the even-numbered cars were going to be electric and the odd-numbered cars were going to be internal combustion, right? But what's happened is a little bit of a marketing reverse ferret. And now what I think, definitely not been told it, the car that was going to be the A7 has now become the petrol A6 because that's now a saloon and a convertible, as well as the A6 e-tron. And so God knows what's going to happen to the A7. The A5 is what was going to replace the A4. So I would place a fiver that on come facelift time, there will be a petrol A4 to go alongside the upcoming A4 e-tron. But what this original thing, the even odd thing, was going to do, it would mean the end for the RS4 and RS6, two like proper Audi staples.
Yeah.
So there was the RS4 25 years edition, which was yellow and brilliant. And then the RS6 GT, when they were both supposed to be sort of last hurrahs for their respective lineages.
And of course, it would have to be an estate, a sporting estate.
Yes, it has to be an estate. I mean, the RS4, I think the B7 came as a saloon and estate and a convertible. The V10 RS6? No, it wasn't the V10, it was the V8 one, but you could have that as an estate as well, as a saloon as well. But other than those two generations, they just went, nope, estates all the time. The RS6 GT, I mean, you boys would love it because the paint scheme's like a 90s IMSA car. You know, that Audi 100 thing that was massive and it had the Audi colours on it and it had the big white wheels.
Yeah, right. The white, silver, black and yellow and red. But one. Oh, my trousers.
So you can get it in a number of colourways. I think you can have black and grey, but white is the one that looks like the IMSA car.
Yeah.
And it's lowered. It's on three-way adjustable dampers, not air springs. It's got 4-litre twin-turbo V8 that's got 621 horsepower and 627 pound-foot.
It's not enough.
Quite a lot.
No, it's not enough.
Quite a lot.
No. Need more than that.
62 and 3.3, 190 miles an hour. It was absolutely mega. I mean, I love an RS6. I'm a big Audi person. It makes the good noise. It makes a big woofly V8 noise, and you put your foot down, the next thing you know, you're in the next county over. It's absolutely ludicrous. And things, I was cruising up and down the M40 in it, having a whale of a time, just enjoying myself, because even though it's got the tougher springs in it, you know, you don't buy a regular RS6 to have, you know, a comfortable cosseting ride. So it's a little bit harsher, but not so bad you'll you'll hate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I kept forgetting that it was quite an attention-grabbing car. So I'd be driving down the road and people would stare at me and be like, what's going on over there? What's that?
Yeah, because it's familiar but not quite immediately recognisable. Like, yes. Did you say an Audi? What Audi is that? Well, you know,
it's definitely I've an Audi, it. But yeah. What's that person driving? Why are they driving that? That's yeah. ridiculous. Yeah. How dare they do that? So, yes, it was many funs and very special to drive because that car's done like 12,000 miles. It's going on to Audi's heritage fleet. So just to be in it, I've been waiting for an excuse to drive it for 2.5 years, I think, or from whenever it first came out. And it's just the most RS6 that you'll ever find. And it was because it was supposed to be this sort of moment, they threw absolutely everything at it. So it does have the stupid paint job. It does have the, you know, it's got the regular power, but that's still enough. It's got tricky diffs. It's got the adjustable springs. And it feels special. It feels like it should be the end of an era, but then it's probably not going to be because there's a new petrol A6. So the next, I think it was going to be the RS5 and RS7. Those are going to come with hybrid powers. So the next RS6 will be a hybrid, almost certainly. So it sort of is an end of an era because it's the last sort of not electrically assisted RS6. But also it isn't because the RS6 will keep going. But tell you what, if that hybrid system is the same one they've put in the Bentley Continental GT, yeah, it's quite good. So I think we'll be all right.
It's an inflection point rather than end of an era, maybe.
Yeah.
I didn't realise the Continental GT was a hybrid. Of course it is.
Yes, I drove one of those the other week as well.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what I've been doing today. I've been writing about it. 4-litre twin turbo hybridised thing. It does more than 30 miles to the gallon on the motorway, which is insane. It's 771 horsepower.
That is kind of bonkers, actually. That's yeah.
It's such a dissonance, that car. Because you know it's supposed to be quiet and smooth and comfortable, but then you drive through the city in all electric mode, and then you go onto the motorway and it goes vroom, and then that's all the noise you really hear, apart from a gentle V8 thrum. And then you look down and you're like, I've done 100 miles and I've barely used a quarter of a tank.
Mm.
That's not right. This is a Bentley. It's got a 4-litre V8.
Yeah.
Hey, I remember that you could buy an S-Class. I tested it once with a 2-litre hybrid system. Was it a twin turbo or a turbo and a supercharger? I can't quite remember. And I was astonished at the sort of performance you could get out of such a small 4-cylinder engine in such a large, heavy vehicle. And I thought it made perfect sense. And I think it died fairly quickly because nobody wanted them.
I'm just looking up what it is. There was an S-Class. When was this?
Oh, God. 10 years ago. I reviewed it on Gareth Jones on Speed. This was a long time ago.
S300 hybrid? Yeah, here you are. 201 brake horsepower, 2.1-litre engine, boasted by a 27-horsepower electric motor, according to Auto Express. This is a 2013 review. It's got a 5 stars.
Yeah.
It still majors on refinement and ride comfort. So it's cheap to buy, cheap to run, 60 mpg without too much effort. 4-cylinder is nowhere near as smooth as the V6 in the S350 BlueTEC, but it is just as quiet. Right, okay.
Yeah, it was the 30th of April 2014 in episode 222, where I reviewed the S-Class 300.
Yes.
Give it its full title. S300 BlueTEC Hybrid L AMG line.
Yeah, so it looks like an AMG, but it isn't one.
Yeah, yeah.
Auto Express really liked it. 5 stars.
Yeah,
I'm all for big hybrids, frankly, especially cars like that weigh 9 million tonnes.
Yeah. Hybrid's going to be around for a long time, Zog, isn't it? Hybrid ain't going away, is it?
No, absolutely not. It's a very good way of, you know, combining the best of the technologies we have, you know, in a, you know, kind of transitional era technology-wise. You get the, you know, benefits of both electrical and internal combustion in one vehicle. So, no, it's hybrid is not going anywhere, and it's totally the way, you know, I'd go at the moment. It's, hybrids are great.
Yeah. Recover your energy. I'm a big fan of the mild hybrid. Recover your energy. Reuse it as quick as you can.
Use all that.
Recover.
Have a nice time.
No. Yay. Yeah, be nice. Hey, guys, that's it for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. And if I'm reading my schedule correctly in front of me, the next episode of Gareth Jones on Speed will be episode 523, which will be published in 2 weeks after this one. And that will be the live recording of 20 years on Speed. Dun, dun, dun. So if you haven't got your tickets for the motorsport and car related daft, funny, punk rock, rock and roll, electronic, EDM, groove party, dance live recording event of the year in Llandudno on July the 19th, get your tickets now, because it looks like it's going to sell out. It looks like it will. So, wow, very, very excited. We've been working very hard with the band, getting the set ready. Zog, you've been working on the Pit Stop Boys, right? How's it going?
I've been working, doing a bit of work with Richard to prepare some material. Yep, we're nearly there.
Super excited. So, next time we'll be live. But for now, from Alex Goy, it's farewell.
Bye.
From Zog, it's see ya.
Goodbye.
And from me, it's ta-ra till the 20th anniversary of Gareth Jones on Speed. See ya.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!